When we marry in the gardens, everyone will be listening for your voice in order to hear it. That's our scripture for today, little children, from the Song of Songs in the Ward Green translation of 2003. And today I have a lot of things that I could talk about. I just had some thoughts today that were, I had such a positive thought today. So many positive beginning thoughts. I mean, I began to think positively. And then it's so easy. Something I learned from Tony Robbins, too, is that he said how the very smallest things can change your mood entirely. Your mood can be completely improved by a very subtle change in the way you think or talk, but it can also be negatively impacted very easily. So I noticed that today as I was looking at the YouTube videos, which I typically look over in the morning or whenever I get up. I get up sometimes quite late in the day, but I look over the YouTube videos and just some days they strike me as perfectly, well, it depends on my own mood. But some days I'm in a much more positive frame of mind than other days. And the slightest thing can throw me off and put me into a negative frame. A frame of mind I'm talking about. And while we're on the topic of frame of mind, before I forget, something about YouTube is there's a channel called ronwyatt.com. R-O-N WYATT.com. Ron Wyatt, one word, .com. That's a YouTube channel. And there, the videos of Ron Wyatt are there. Right now, they're featuring 1 year ago. There was a video by Victoria Jackson, a former cast member of Saturday Night Live, right? A TV series that was very popular, I guess you could say, or a comedy show. But Ron Wyatt's videos are anything but comedy, of course. I mean, there are all these discoveries, and there's a video by him that explains where he says here why most scholars and scientists will not accept the discoveries of Ron Wyatt. There's a video about that on his video page also. That's an interesting video, but there are so many fascinating videos to be found there. And also, before we begin our study, this belt, I finished this the day after I last talked about it, but I forgot to show you until now. But I cut three belt loops. I forgot what they were called. But on the back, you might be able to see the, it's not enough light. There's a staple that I put there. Yeah, it's not my purpose to show exactly what I did here, but I skived the leather so that I could glue it together so that the two ends were, you know, able to be glued together without being overly thick. By overlapping them, I could get them to be not too thick. So I tapered the leather at each of the two ends and then glued it together with a very, very flexible, strong glue called goop. Then I put one staple in the middle of it, and one leather staple, that is, and I did that for each of the three loops that I cut from one piece, which I'd skived and glued together as one wide loop before I cut it into three. And I cut it into three. So that cutting was successful. And this is belt number 6 with the brass snaps and a brass buckle on it right now. But because it's got brass snaps, it's easy to unsnap it and put a different buckle on it at any time. Belt number 6 of the dark brown leather of my own construction from the Sapeci leather 1.5 inch wide this one is, and I put it on one of my new pairs of jeans. Nowadays you can get jeans that are stonewashed. You can get them all different shades of color. This one is a vintage blue, I think. You can get all different kinds of colors, and they're just a beautiful jeans. You know, I mean, depending on what kind you like, I've been buying the Wrangler jeans, but I think they were the ones I bought when I was younger also, but I'm not certain about that. But, you know, having a positive frame of mind, is God's kingdom going to be an intervention? That's one thing that comes to mind. Is God going to intervene and force people? Or, you know, just kill all the bad people and then he won't have to force people anymore to do what's right? Or is there going to be a waking up of people where they become awake and the bad people just basically go crazy and kill themselves or something bad, a natural disaster takes care of the bad people, and the good people wake up and, you know, God's kingdom comes about because the good people, or all the majority of people, that is, maybe everyone's going to wake up and the majority of people are going to take over and not take part in the popular elections. And maybe it's just going to be God's kingdom in the sense that we wait, we're more patient. We don't vote in the popular election because that's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, that's something you say, well, we have to vote because if we don't vote, everything's going to collapse. Well, how do you know everything's going to collapse if you don't have a system in place? Like, how do you know that? Maybe things will start to reorder themselves naturally into God's kingdom, where everything is properly or more justly and equitably and favorably structured according to the needs of all humans. Maybe everything will just take care of itself because humans will, out of love, do the right thing because they will allow God to act through them. I mean, how do we know whether the political system as it is going to be destroyed by God or whether it will be dealt with because humans will simply refuse to take part in politics anymore on earth? You know, human politics will become a thing of the past. Everything will be under God's kingdom. It's just a thought that I've had recently, because we know that this knee-jerk panic reaction, we have to vote for a new leader, and we have to take political policies to heart, we have to side with a human leader, all of that is just done in a big hurry, a big rush, right? When you have time to think about what's good for us, like how to get your health, that only comes about when you're not under pressure. The answers only can be found when you're not under this immense time pressure. So let's begin our reading now today, if we might. In our previous article, Moses Drawn Out, we're reading paragraph chapter 4, in the Ark of Urartu right now. The article called The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. Now this is chapter 4 once again, paragraph 4. In our previous article, Moses Drawn Out, the verse taken for the caption was from Job 38:31. In the Hebrew Tanakh, it's called. That's the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. Or, that same Old Testament is also translated in one version as Bishop's Bible. In Hebrew and English, respectively, we have the verse from Job 38:31, which reads, we can't read the Hebrew. I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I'm not going to read that. I'm not enough of a speaker of Hebrew to read that, but in Bishop's Bible it says, "Wilt thou hinder the sweet influences of the seven stars, or loose the bands of Orion?" And the spelling there is Old English. In the Bishop's Bible of 1568. The Hebrew, I would have trouble even reading that. Maybe I can practice and learn how to say that another day. But during my research for that article, which was the Moses article, I had found a website to cast further light on that scripture of Job. And it has been right here this whole time, waiting to be revealed to all. As the website still exists, please see Setterfield. And where is Setterfield? I opened that up, and there it is. Astronomical Insights, B. Setterfield. Here's the article. Still there, even today. The link had not been broken. It's called helpmewithbiblestudy.org, the website, actually. Okay, so that's interesting. I said the article may be found in our root directory, but our root directory is no longer accessible because the website host has made that inaccessible, so you can't get to my root directory anymore. Except, wait a minute now, have I made everything in the root directory? If I make everything in the root directory available, I can do that using a program I wrote that runs in one of the script languages that they use. I forget the name. What's the name of the language? Whatever it is, the script language. I can probably make everything in the root directory available using that script language. But it would have to be clicked on to get there. I'd have to make a link to it. Orion the Hunter bears apt relation to a hunter, Nimrod. Yeah, remember in the Bible, Nimrod was called a hunter in opposition to Jehovah in some translations. And in Hungarian mythology, Orion is called Nimrod. On the subject of Nimrod, an Egyptian, and he's an Egyptian, whom we have earlier identified as Narmer, or with Narmer. We identify them as the same person. That leopard tamer of Narmer Pallet fame, on that subject, may we confirm his date by a 2774 BCE solar eclipse. We've talked about this. Let's attempt to be clear here, as the world is restless. Tunisia has had a revolution. The Middle East and Northern Africa are rushing to the streets in mass protest rallies. Thursday, January 27th, 2011. And Hurriyet Daily News International headline reads, "Demand for Change Rocks Arab World." The eclipse date of July 18th, 2774 BCE was an historic date from its first discovery. My initials, WG, January 20th. Second, 2011, please correct me as I am not aware of any earlier reference, 2112 hours. It was discovered sometime after the noted time, 2112 hours, Eastern Standard Time, through a comparison of estimated dates for a rising of the star Sothis, Greek also, Sirius or Scorcher, Chinese, Tian Lang, Xing, Daily Wolf Star, Latin, no, it's Xing, it's Tian Lang, Xing, Daily Wolf Star, I think that means, in Chinese, Latin, Canis Major, Big Dog, that means, English, Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S. There's a place, an organization called Sirius Disclosure, I think it's called. A UFO, or what used to be called UFOs, a researcher involved in that sort of research, and aliens, you know, extraterrestrial research, has a website associated with the name Sirius, like that. I think it's called Sirius Disclosure. The brightest star in the night sky is what Sirius is, also named Dog Star. In Egyptian, it's called, she's called Sopdet. She's a goddess, which is the Dog Star, or the star Canis Major, a very bright star, the brightest, in fact, in the night sky. Now, shortly before sunrise, at the start of the Phoenix cycle, a comparison of estimated dates for a rising of the star Sothis shortly before sunrise at the start of the Phoenix cycle, according to the estimated year of 2773 BCE, adjusting 1 year for the lack of a zero year to 2774 BCE by searching for all solar eclipses in that year using Solex 10.2. These were my searches with a topocentric setting and at the site of Hilla. That would be the location on the Earth. Topocentric meaning it's located specifically somewhere on Earth that we're searching for this eclipse. And I was searching at the location of Hilla, which is near Babylon, the ancient site of Babylon. And I found the eclipse on July 18th, 2774. But, of course, the eclipse was not located directly over this site of Hilla. I must have been searching a wider area than that, because I found it over Noah's Ark, which is north of Hilla, although it travels in a shape which would... Let's go take a look. I haven't looked at this with regard to thinking about the place of Hilla. Let's see if we can find that eclipse again. Where is it? There it is. Let's click on this. Oh, yeah. So Hilla is... Okay, so Hilla would be in this picture down here, south of the eclipse path, somewhere, you know, between the Persian Gulf and the northeastern tip of the Mediterranean, for example. Somewhere near Baghdad is where Hilla is, so it's not on the path of the eclipse. So I found it, you know, despite where I was looking, which is not exactly where I found it, but it was in an important place. It registered as Thoth 1 by the Almagest ephemeris calculator. That was by a gentleman called Mr. Van Gent. And that was the calculator I used before I wrote my own calculator called LEAP on the Will of Jehovah website. The LEAP calculator is operating, and I use it now. But back then I used the Almagest, and it startled me because, well, it enabled me to find out, using the Almagest, what day of the Egyptian calendar these ancient dates fell on in the Julian calendar, comparing the two calendars, which I can now do with the LEAP calculator on my website. So it startled me because the Phoenix cycle of Sothis was also started on Thoth 1. Right, so why would there be an eclipse on the same day? Like, that was strange. Didn't have to be an eclipse. You know, that's important, it seemed. First day of the ancient Egyptian calendar, Thoth 1, but my main feelings were of excitement and joy, even though I was startled. I also had this excitement and joy. As I went down to warm up by the fire, I remember thinking that all of the implications of this discovery could in no way have hit me yet. I couldn't have really digested it or processed it all immediately. It was too intense. And I believed it to be very big, the biggest chronological discovery of all time, without doubt. That's what I thought. So I felt deep excitement, inner fire, and a certain calm. Finally, the chronology was settled. Finally, by an impossible shot. The only reason I had looked in the year 2774 BCE was some belief that whoever calculated the year as 2773 BCE hadn't accounted for the fact that there is no zero or year called zero. but the truth might be better expressed as faith operating by God. This was no random search, and there was no reason to look anywhere else. Both, because there would be no reason to do anything different if it was random and had not succeeded. The bull, symbol of Nimrod, symbol of a ruler, is there on the Narmer palette. This is the Narmer palette. You see the symbol of the bull in the upper left and right. A giant picture of the bull's head in both corners there. But also the other side of the Narmer palette, the top of it also, same thing. The giant representation of bull's heads, the top left and right. We can see that there on the one side of the Narmer palette, right? And on the other side from the left going to the right, on that one face of the Narmer palette, but on the other Narmer face, also on the left and right, both cases represented the representation of a bull, okay? Let's jump down here. So the bull is the symbol of Nimrod because it's on the Narmer palette. But also other people have talked about Nimrod as being symbolized by a bull, and the reason is because a bull's horns symbolizes power, of course. Proverbs 14 and 4, what's that say? Something about a bull, maybe? Where there are no cattle, the manger is clean, but the crop is abundant because of the power of a bull. Exactly in tune with what we're saying. On front and back are the bull's heads at each top corner, as I just showed you. On the back stands Nimrod himself wielding a rod of power. There he is. Right? The back of the Narmer palette. Nimrod has this great scepter in his hand, or rod. The titulary at top and center of each side is similar, but not repeated precisely in the same form. Let's take a look. What's the titulary? Let's close that one. There it is, the titulary right here in the center. Some kind of a titulary. Right? And there it is there as well. So it's a symbolic form of this titulary. It's not exactly the same either in each case. We've got to try and get through this article here. Through this paragraph. Today we're trying to get through this paragraph. Paragraph 4. The allergies are still prevalent until we get a deep frost, and then the allergies will go away. Cronus, the god of time. Okay. It's crazy because you see here, okay, there's a titulary, but why is there no writing on the on the Narmer palette? So the scenes on the palette also are telling a story without language, not one word. The story cries out, but had there been any written words, would they not have more effectively conveyed the meaning? I asked this question here, and I think I had some insight back at the time I wrote this. Why would there be no writing unless there was no writer? The conclusion of this matter is that the king, Nimrod, is the ruler of all men and unable to find a writer anywhere. That's the conclusion. Because why else would he not have written something on the palette. Now, maybe we can invent some other reason why he wouldn't have written anything on there. But if he wanted to tell a story, why wouldn't he? It looks like he's depicting. It depicts a story. Why would there be no writing explaining it? It just seems hard to explain in any other way other than the possibility that there was no such thing as language at that time. So the year 2774 BCE came, and writing did not yet take form. There was no written way of conveying information. That's what that appears to be saying. Now, there was a titulary, which is symbolic, you know, representation of something, but there was nothing more than that. No words, just a symbol of the ruler in the form of the titulary. If that was a word, well, we don't necessarily, maybe someone knows what it means, but it's not the presence of a full-fledged language. It certainly isn't manifest. The presence of the eclipse proves at once both the dating. Okay, so also they went to trouble to show that there was an eclipse, because they showed the interlocking of the necks of these two animals, like they were trying to portray something like an eclipse without using language. So that conveys the dating through the dating of that eclipse, and also the absence of written language is also conveyed there, that the fact that there was no language to convey that message. Cronus, the god of time, and Cronos, this is the interpretation that I got at the time, and Cronus, the god of time, which is C-H-R-O-N-U-S, and Cronos, K-R-O-N-O-S, derived from the K-R-N, or horn, of the later Aramaic and Hebrew, Aramaic being related somewhat to the Hebrew language, KRN in Hebrew signifying either rays of light, a hill, or horn, such as is grown by, for example, a bull. And these different things may at last come together in the person of Nimrod, whose symbol was a bull. Ancient writers have documented that. Kronos need not be viewed as confused with... So Kronos with a KR... need not be viewed as confused with Cronos with a C-H-R, god of time with a C-H-R, chronography, for example, chronology, for example, any more than Nimrod with Narmer need be viewed as confused, nor I with myself. No, for instead the Narmer palette has united Narmer with Nimrod, Cronos with a C-H-R, with Cronos K-R, history with mythology in one divine moment in time before and at the dawn of the pen, signifying the written word, right? The pen signifies the written word. The writing implement signifies writing. And at the dawn of that writing, it would appear before the confusion of languages that led to the invention of writing as a way of preserving language because of the confusion, there needed to be an invention. Before that happened, this palette was created at that time, just prior to. So 2774 would be prior to the invention of written language, is what that palette may be conveying to us. The Hebrew word SHR means bull or ruler, and in the Chaldee, the word TUR means the same thing, from which a Latinized quote-unquote Taurus, the bull, derives, as to quote-unquote Tyrannus, meaning ruler, taken as basis for Tyrannosaurus Rex, the tyrant lizard king, or Assyrian-winged bulls. That's another image that is seen in ancient times of the time of the Assyrian Empire, which was much later than the time we're talking about. The Assyrian winged bulls of the time of, I mean, even thinking as late as the time, weren't there bulls with wings in the time of King Darius of the Persian Empire? I think so. But the Assyrian winged bulls, that would date, how old would that be? Let me think. When did Assyria? Oh, yes, right. Okay, I think we're thinking of the time of Sennacherib. Right. Sennacherib and Sargon, the kings around the time of Samaria's capture by the Assyrians, which was 719 BCE, 719 BCE in the genealogy, our chronology. These are all echoes. These bulls are all echoes of Nimrod. That's it for today and our study. I had an adventure. But the thing is, the reason I can't talk too much about the adventure with my car is because I think that everything seemed to work fairly well yesterday, right, with my car. But that doesn't mean there's still not something that I don't know yet. So I'm hesitant to really be overconfident about it, but I was worried that maybe my car wouldn't even work, that maybe the battery died because I got a jump start, which when I got home after having been jump started, I didn't try to start the car again because the battery was dead. Couldn't have started the car. But I never did test the car after I got the jump start, so I wasn't sure that the new battery was going to work, and I wasn't sure if I would ruin the new battery. So what I did was I measured before I put the battery in the car. I measured the resistance, how many ohms between the two battery leads. It was 12,000 ohms. And when I turned on the ignition switch, it remained at 12,000 ohms. That means if I had a battery in there with a 12 volt battery, which is what the battery is, that would have given me 1 milliamp of flow through 12,000 ohms. 12 volts through 12,000 is 1 milliamp. 12 through 12 ohms would be 1 amp, but 12 through 12,000 is 1 milliamp. So 1 milliamp wouldn't be a large drain on the battery. So that made me more confident that I could start the car and try the new battery, because I was worried that maybe there was a short circuit in the car, in the system, that I could damage my battery. So that was what I did before I ever took the new battery out for its first drive. That was yesterday. So I can't even talk about all the different things that I do and how you charge a new battery. Don't have time to get into that today either. And the difference between AGM and flooded batteries, there's more to say about all of that too. But it's October 13th, 2024 of the Common Era. It's 19:04 hours North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Live Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now. This was Chapter 4, Paragraph 4 of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. Once again, bye for now.